From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where in surrounding communities, walking to school is making a comeback. Although the CDC says just 6% of elementary school students walk to school in the U.S. every day, that may be changing, thanks in part to the pandemic and a national shortage of school bus drivers. For more on this, we're joined by GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse. Meg, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, as always, for having me on, Paris.
You know, Meg, I never walked to school as a kid. Did you?
Yeah, I qualified for the bus growing up in Worcester because my junior high was more than 2 miles away from where I lived. But I still walked. I walked the whole way, mostly every day in any weather, because I just loved hoofing it with my friends.
Okay, that sounds awesome. It sounds like I really missed out on this whole walking to school business. And this was sort of a rite of passage. So why did it take a pandemic for walking to school to become a thing again?
Well, the pandemic mixed everything up, right? Didn't it? You know, it also created new opportunities, too. Some parents who could work from home also found they had the time to volunteer and walk with kids. And some schools encouraged kids to walk because they needed more space on buses for social distancing. Or some schools were overwhelmed by cars dropping off kids individually. All those idling cars causing traffic congestion around schools. So more schools got interested in walking. I followed along with one school that did.
Come on, guys! Time for school! Good morning!
So to set the scene, it's 8 a.m., and that's phys ed teacher Kelsey Duffy in Framingham. They're leading a veritable conga line of kids through parking lots, apartment complexes, and roadways, all on their way to Harmony Grove School in Framingham. One was eating a Klondike bar for breakfast. Another 7-year-old named Eli, whose family's from Brazil, told me he really missed the warm bus.
Because winter's coming soon, and my hands are cold.
Oh, I hear you, Eli. I don't like my feet being cold either. So, Meg, how does this whole sort of conga line work? And about how far on average do these students have to walk?
Well, adults map out the route and they let families know that they'll collect the kids there to walk them to school each day. The younger the kids, the shorter the walk. So in Framingham, the kids walked about a half mile to school. And I should say, this is not a new idea. It started more than half a century ago in Japan. Since then, it's spread around the world.
But it never really took off in the U.S., did it? I mean, we're so used to kids just getting dropped off or just getting on the school bus.
Yes, we are. And it's important to note that busing is the norm in most communities now because of school assignment systems that can place students in schools far and wide. And Boston spends about $125 million on bus transportation annually. And so now, as you know, there's a school bus driver shortage, and more schools have looked into these walking buses as a way to get kids to school in the pandemic. And that has communities rethinking the value of walking to school. In fact, many districts around the country have been forced to lengthen the distance students are allowed to walk to school as the number of bus drivers shrinks.
And I mean, a little more exercise is never a bad thing, huh?
Yes, and you're not the only one to say this. I spoke with experimental psychologist Philip Tomporowski at the University of Georgia. He's an expert on moving and comprehension, and he says the problem has presented districts with new opportunities.
So I'm sort of applaud this notion of having sort of the walking bus or biking trails for children because it provides an opportunity for them to understand how the world works in a more naturalistic fashion.
Tomporowski says decades of data show that movement can boost student learning. And he says the walking bus is just what children need, as recess and playtime are reduced at many schools because they're so focused on testing.
The idea of having a parent that's there, not necessarily telling them to keep a march pace, but to sort of keep control and having the children talk to one another. This is contextual information that they'll remember much more than sitting down and trying to memorize a list of test items. The data are pretty clear on that.
Ah, that's really interesting, and it does make sense. But Meg, I imagine for some kids, it may not be safe to walk to school.
Yeah, that's right. Some neighborhoods can accommodate walking better than others. Equitable Cities founder Charles T. Brown says neighborhoods where people of color live often don't have street lighting, sidewalks, bike lanes, or proximity to a school to make something like a walking school bus happen safely. But federal funding dedicated to infrastructure improvement has the power to change that.
We need policy systems and environmental changes to ensure that if walking school buses and walking to school is to be the thing that we promote, which I do, we must ensure that we do it by centering the importance of racial equity and inclusion, particularly for persons with disabilities.
Interest in walking and walking buses has ebbed in the last decade, but state transportation officials here in Massachusetts say it's picking up again. They estimate about 100 schools now participate in some form of walking school bus at least a few times a year. And Boston Mayor Michelle Wu has even made the walking bus idea a cornerstone of her education plan.
So could we start to see, I don't know what you'd call them, walking monitors in addition to or in lieu of bus drivers?
Maybe one day. Why not? At Harmony Grove Elementary in Framingham, they don't pay anyone to do this, to walk with the children. But they needed help, so that problem was solved, as many school problems are, by caring teachers. Duffy, the phys ed teacher, took the lead in this instance. She says Harmony Grove saw a huge increase in absenteeism in 2020. And so ever since summer school, she and two other teachers at the school pick up kids by foot. They volunteer their time doing this every morning.
Helping our neighbors, helping our family. This is a family. You can't raise kids on your own, and we are just those extra people who love them. And we're willing to step up.
Ugh, you gotta love teachers, right? They do it all, even when they shouldn't have to. Well, Meg, I've really enjoyed learning about this. That's GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So this is bringing back a lot of memories of the early morning school commute for me. How about for you? Did you walk to school as a kid or get there another way? What are some of your favorite memories from that time? Or maybe it wasn't so sweet. Send me a text with your thoughts at 617-272-7346. That's 617-272-7346. I'm excited to hear from you. All right, before we go, I should tell you what else is up. There's a new leader in town. Michelle Wu was sworn in as Boston's 56th mayor earlier today. She says she wants to hit the ground running to help the city move forward as a whole.
This is not just about a siloed conversation about specific neighborhoods or specific issues, but how everything fits together intersectionally and how in this moment we really can move with the urgency that our communities are feeling.
Wu is the first woman and the first person of color elected as Boston's mayor. In other news, COVID cases are on the rise in Massachusetts, including in the state's jails and prisons. Nearly 50 people being held at the Bristol County House of Correction in Dartmouth have tested positive in recent days, as well as six staffers. William LeGrant is currently being held in a 30-person group bunk area there. Speaking over a jailhouse phone, he says the Bristol County Sheriff's Department isn't doing enough to keep people safe.
They're not separating us. We're pretty much 2.5 feet apart. Inmates receive no new mask or anything, chemicals, supplies, bleach, nothing.
Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson says that staff nurses are monitoring people for COVID symptoms, but they are not conducting routine tests. He says anyone who does test positive is moved into isolation. And finally, an early sighting of the first North Atlantic right whale calf of the season is offering some hope for the critically endangered species. Researchers say a newborn calf was seen with its mother yesterday. Charles Mayo, senior scientist at Provincetown's Center for Coastal Studies, says calving season usually begins in December, so this could be an indication that a larger number of critically endangered whales will be born this year.
And the hope would be 30 calves born. It's for all of us just to stay tuned and figure out if that's going to turn out to be true. This is a bit of an encouragement, though.
There are believed to be fewer than 400 North Atlantic right whales left in existence. So let's hope those babies keep on coming. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since procreation and sustaining a population, I'm Paris Alston. Be well. By the way, Every day you hear us tackle news in Boston on Consider This, well, another one of WBUR's programs uses a wider lens. On Point, hosted by Meghna Chakrabarty, sets out to make sense of the world together, from the economy and healthcare to politics and the environment and much more. On Point talks with newsmakers and real people about the issues that matter most. Get the On Point podcast wherever you listen. Just search On Point and hit subscribe.